This is Wendy Bauer, returning with a Decatur Herald and Review dated November 23, 2015. We will continue now with the death notices, beginning on page A6. Dan R. Gilman, Decatur. Dan R. Gilman, 63, passed away on November 19, 2015, with all of his children by his side. Services celebrating the life of Dan will be at 5 o'clock p.m. on Wednesday, November 25, 2015, at Maranatha Assembly of God. The family will receive friends 1 hour prior from 4 to 5 p.m. at the church. Vita M. Rogers, Mount Zion. Vita M. Rogers, 87, of Mount Zion, passed away Friday, November 20, 2015, at Heritage Manor in Mount Zion, Illinois. Services to celebrate Veda's life will be at 11 a.m. Wednesday, November 25, 2015, at Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to service at the funeral home. Burial will be in Macon County Memorial Park. Memorials in memory of Veda may be made to St. Jude's Hospital. Judith Lee Scott, Decatur. Judith Lee Scott, 75, of Decatur, passed away on Saturday, November 21st, 2015, in St. Mary's Hospital. Honoring Judith's wishes, cremation will take place at Graceland Fairlawn Crematory. There will be no public services. David Miles, Danville. David Miles, 62, of Danville, passed away at Northwestern Memorial Hospital on Tuesday, November 17, 2015, with family by his side. A visitation will be held at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville on Monday, November 23, 2015, from 1 to 6 p.m., with cremation to follow. And a listing of deaths in Decatur and Macon County are as follows. Edith I. Bonds, Decatur. Devin Bunch, Jr., Decatur. Dolores A. Butts, Decatur. Dan R. Gilman, Decatur. Michael O'Bannon, Decatur. Veda M. Rogers, Mount Zion. William R. Schmidt, Decatur. Evelyn Schutt, Decatur. Judith Lee Scott, Decatur. And William E. Walker, Decatur. All funerals scheduled for Monday, November 23, 2015. Edith I. Bonds, 92, Decatur. 1 p.m. in Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home in Mount Zion. Dolores A. Butts, 81, of Tucson, Arizona, formerly of Decatur, at 2 p.m. in Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Daniel Lee Rookie Edwards, 64, of Mattoon, at 8 p.m. in Edwards Funeral Home, Arcola. William R. Bill Schmidt, 72, of Decatur, at 11 a.m. in St. James Catholic Church. Evelyn Marie Schutt, 97, Decatur, at 6 p.m. in Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. And finally, Merlin Leonard Tukey Sevier, 84, of Hopewell, Arkansas, formerly of Shelbyville, at 2 p.m. in South Cross Roads Church, Hopewell. A listing of campus accomplishments include Cameron Jedlowski of Atlanta, awarded the Iowa State University Fred Foreman Scholarship for Growth in Leadership Participation. Gregory Eaton of Warrensburg was awarded Iowa State University Scholarship for Excellence in Agriculture. Parkland College student Jeffrey Havner of Tuscola attended the SEMA show, an automotive specialty products trade event in Las Vegas, Nevada. The Herald and Review welcomes announcements of Central Illinois College students making the news. Information should be sent to Campus News, Herald and Review, 601 East William Street, Decatur, 62523. And now from the Books and Literature section, from Decatur by Donette Beckett, Herald and Review staff writer, Writer's passion paves road for first novel. As a copy editor for the Herald and Review, Sherry Kane understood what makes good writing. "The job made me think about story structure and how to build a story," she said. Kane is now an author after publishing her first book, I Spy with My Third Eye, available as an ebook. The story follows a private investigator in search of missing child and her abductor. The ex-police officer has special powers, giving her former boss speculation to recruit her for the assignment. The story was not found among the pages of the newspaper, but in the stories of her own mind. Kane has always been fascinated with the paranormal, crime, mystery, and the disappearance of people. "It has always sparked my interest," she said. For example, the history of the Lindbergh baby kidnapping in 1932 has often piqued her curiosity. "Can a criminal really get a child out of the house without the parents knowing?" Kane said. "Yes, because kids are naturally curious." The question started the process of her book. Kane may have honed her skills at the local newspaper, but her love of writing didn't start there. Originally from Minnesota, Kane began writing as a child and has always considered herself a writer. She tried to get her work published after college and before she moved to Decatur, "but I wasn't as good of a writer," she said. Throughout the last years, Kane has started several books, but recently focused her attention on I Spy with My Third Eye. The process began in August. She contacted a publisher with just 3 chapters. "She liked it," Kane said. "She said to go ahead and finish it." The book has been published as an ebook, and Kane is happy with that. With her experience in print media, she saw that is where publishing is going. Still, she knows it is important to be good at the craft. "If the story isn't very good, no one will read it," she said. "You have to have the writing skills." When the author started in journalism, she didn't want to be a reporter. "I wanted to do what I'm doing now," Kane said. When she left the Herald and Review, the progression seemed natural to concentrate on her writing. "I enjoy telling stories, creating characters," Kane said, "and it grows out of my love of reading." The sidebar tells about the book. The title is I Spy with My Third Eye. The author is Sherry Kane. It's an ebook with 84 pages, and the list price is $4.88. It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Goodreads sites. And now we have the Dear Dr. Roach column, written by Dr. Keith Roach for the Herald and Review. Beginning, Dear Dr. Roach, what happens when test results are at odds? I am an 85-year-old male in pretty good health. I recently had a stool test by the Veterans Affairs Hospital. They came back and stated that I had blood in my stool, which indicates colon cancer, and that I should have a colonoscopy ASAP. My insurance company provided me with some 8 possible signs and symptoms to consider. I had none and no family history. I consulted my very qualified primary physician. For the past 15 years, I have had a colonoscopy every 5 years. The last was in 2010. My results were always A-OK, with always one small polyp in the same place. I had a ColoVantage, a methylated septin 9 test. The interpretation came back as negative. My physician informed me that the negative ColoVantage blood test was a good result. He believed there was no further need for a colonoscopy. May I have your opinion? The answer from Dr. Roach. When 2 tests have completely different results, a wise physician, like your well-qualified primary physician, looks at the test characteristics. I'm sure he found that the ColoVantage test, a blood test looking for an abnormal gene associated with colon and other cancers, has a high likelihood of being correct when it says there is no abnormal gene present. And he knows that the fecal blood test has many false positive results. I have the luxury of taking things one step further, and I performed a formal decision analysis based on Bayes' theorem using your likelihood of having colon cancer based on being an 85-year-old man, the results of your positive stool blood test, and the results of your negative methylated septin 9 test. Putting all the information together, I find you have a 0.4% chance of having colon cancer. Since the risk of having an adverse event from a colonoscopy at your age is about the same, I would recommend against getting a colonoscopy, as your physician did. The booklet on colon cancer provides useful information on the causes and cures of this common malady. Readers can obtain a copy by writing Dr. Roach, book number 505, 628 Virginia Drive, Orlando, Florida 32803. Enclose a check or money order for $4.75 with the recipient's printed name and address. Please allow 4 weeks for delivery. Question regarding oxygen and AFib. Dear Dr. Roach, I have noticed that three of my extended episodes with AFib in the past 5 years have been after periods of reduced oxygen in my lungs. Two times I have had a head cold, and one time I was at 9,000 feet elevation in Colorado. Is there any possible correlation between AFib and oxygen deprivation? If this situation is logical, is it also logical that AFib can be treated with oxygen in order to make the additional electrical impulses unnecessary? Has oxygen ever been used as a treatment for AFib? The answer from Dr. Roach. You are partly correct. Having low oxygen levels to the heart is indeed a risk factor for development of atrial fibrillation. Lung disease, including sleep apnea, certainly increase risk. Although it makes sense that high altitudes would worsen existing AFib or increase its likelihood, that hasn't been proven. Treatment for atrial fibrillation can include reversing the underlying cause if possible. And although that isn't always possible, treating chronic lung disease is one way of doing so. If people have low oxygen levels in the blood, easily checked now in the office, then oxygen may indeed be a useful treatment. However, colds do not affect oxygen levels in the blood, although a very severe pneumonia might. People with normal levels of oxygen in the blood don't need or benefit from supplemental oxygen, even with atrial fibrillation. And the Prairie Talk column from Dick Zaker, Herald and Review Senior Copy Editor. Yes, there's a holiday song about a winter wonderland, and yes, James Russell Lower pondered, "And what is so rare as a day in June?" But you will not convince me there is a finer time of year than October, even after the Cubs crashed and burned. So why do I bring this up in November, you may well ask? I must rhapsodize about what must be the most glorious tree in all of Decatur. It's essentially across Franklin Street Road from Mount Calvary Lutheran Church in South Shores. It positively was ablaze this autumn with yellows trying to outdo golds and both ganging up on the brilliant reds. The sugar maple, or whatever flavor of tree it may be, had its best year in the last several and just did my aging heart good day after day. It would take someone with the expertise of a Stew Hawbaker to explain why there was a layer of leaves that seemed not to have turned color underneath their fluorescent fellows. October, as you may know, is preceded by September, which is the longest month. Oh, yes it is. No other month has 9 letters. Extra points for those of you continuing to read this. I don't have any Clark County contacts, but I wondered if it's confusing in Casey, having a Casey's General Store. Of course, we live in Decatur, a city with 4 main streets, so I guess I shouldn't talk. Now, how do you throw out your trash can? This is not as obvious as it may seem. You can simply put it out on the curb. They're used to seeing it there. Do you have to resort to a sign, set it on its top as a sign of distress, or just call your hauler and say the empty can must go? And what happens if the workers forget about your request until they've emptied the other cans? Which one goes? You've heard of meteoric rises to fame. Somebody's not thinking this through. In my experience, meteors fall. Oh, sure, you're going to say. What about meteor showers when they're streaking across the sky? I don't know why I talk to you sometimes. Now, here's something that's pretty wild. 350 languages are spoken in the U.S., according to the Census Bureau. We're talking Pennsylvania Dutch, Ukrainian, Amharic. That last one comes from Ethiopia. American Indian languages count for 150 of them in America, including Yupik, Dakota, Apache, Karis, and Cherokee. The New York City metro area seems to be the hot spot of this polyglot situation. More than one-third of the population speaks a language other than English at home, totaling 200 different tongues. Believe it or not, Bengali is spoken by 105,000 people there. Bangladesh and India are the usual homes for that language. Just up the road in Chicago, there are 153 languages, including 17,500 folks who speak Serbian. Certainly makes me wish I'd kept up with my Francais. Speaking of languages and words, I am claiming all rights to this one. Democrazy. You've been following this nuttiest of all campaigns, have you not? And even 100 Republican candidates and a good dozen on the donkey side, or so it seems. Next time you get into a discussion about politics, try it out, although it might be more effective written out than spoken, maybe in an email exchange. On second thought, I'm not sure Americans can discuss politics civilly. There's scant agreement on what the facts are. And additional local news from Harristown, Tony Reed reports, man escapes house fire in Harristown. A Harristown man escaped a fire at his home Sunday morning that left a damage bill totaling $20,000 and some lingering questions about the placement of smoke detectors. Firefighters were called to the single-story home in the 800 block of South Gravel Pit Road at 6:52 a.m. and found smoke and flames pouring out a roof gable of vent. The resident had been asleep earlier when the fire broke out, but he was awakened and escaped the house after a passerby saw the flames and hammered on the door. Harristown Fire Protection District crews were on the scene for more than 2 hours, dealing with the fire and its aftermath. They were backed up by crews from Niantic, South Wheatland, and Warrensburg fire departments. Harristown Fire Chief Stephen Gambrill said the home was equipped with working smoke detectors, but they didn't go off because smoke never reached them. When we made entry to the house, there was absolutely no sign the house was on fire on the inside, Gambrill said, but on the outside you got flames rolling out of the eaves. Gambrill said the interior detectors would have gone off when the fire intensity let it burn into the interior space. But he said the Harristown fire does raise some questions about whether it's worth putting an extra detector in the attic, which, with chimneys and flues, can frequently be a place where fires start. Another question is, are you going to be able to hear it with all the insulation and stuff up in the attic, added Gambrill. It's one of those things where each person has to make their own decision. The chief said some new fire detection systems link smoke detectors together in different parts of a home, so that activating one activates all of them. Gambrill said the Harristown home was left repairable but not livable after the fire, and the resident was staying with family. The cause of the fire is under investigation. And from the opinion page, Eugene Robinson, columnist, GOP hopefuls stumble over Paris retort. The impact of the Paris attacks on the Republican presidential race may turn out to be minimal, especially since the establishment candidates aren't making any more sense than outsiders Donald Trump and Ben Carson. Theoretically, a deadly rampage by Islamic State terrorists ought to make Republican voters think twice about presidential hopefuls who have zero experience in government and no expertise in foreign or military affairs. But the contenders who hold or held high office are offering little more than bellicose rhetoric and overblown pledges of toughness. Not that it's easy to match Trump for hyperbole. Refugees from Syria are now pouring into our great country, he said on Twitter. Who knows who they are? Some could be ISIS. Is our president insane? But Chris Christie, who should know better, went not just over the top, but around the bend. He said all Syrian refugees should be turned away, including orphans under five. As governor of New Jersey, maybe he'll order a security sweep of the Garden State's elementary school playgrounds. For the record, Syrian refugees are not pouring into the United States. There's hardly even a trickle. Since the Civil War began, slightly more than 2,000 refugees have been admitted. Compare our meager total with the estimated 2 million Syrians taking refuge in Turkey or the hundreds of thousands flooding into Europe. Boosting that number to 10,000 over the next year, as Obama plans, would still mean that the U.S. contribution to alleviating one of the worst refugee crises since World War II doesn't amount to a drop in the bucket. Carson's response to the Islamic State is, unsurprisingly, vague and off the wall. He wrote an op-ed in the Washington Post calling for a military strategy virtually identical to President Obama's, augmented by a multi-pronged communication strategy that leverages our strengths in media production and messaging, combined with cutting off traditional access routes to social media for radical Islamist groups. But Marco Rubio, too, called for a dramatic escalation in social media warfare. He said that where we strike them, we capture or kill their leaders. We videotape the operations. We publicize them, because this is a group that heavily uses propaganda to attract fighters and donors from around the world. And John Kasich proposed a new government agency to promote Judeo-Christian Western values to the world. Lindsey Graham had the best response to Kasich's brainstorm. I think that was the Crusades. Jeb Bush, the ultimate establishment candidate, seemed to sense both opportunity and peril. The United States should not delay in leading a global coalition to take out ISIS with overwhelming force, he said in a speech Wednesday. Militarily, we need to intensify our efforts in the air and on the ground. If that sounds familiar, it's because all the establishment GOP candidates pledged to rely on the generals to tell them how many troops to send. Obama says he follows the generals' counsel, too. Rogue candidate Trump, of course, needs no advice. He says he will bomb the expletive out of ISIS, applauds the fact that Russian President Vladimir Putin is doing the same, and vows to destroy the oil fields that provide much of the Islamic State's wealth. He says all of this in typically bombastic fashion. His claim that he will win by sheer force of personality is deeply unserious. But the actual policies he rants about may resonate with GOP voters. Rely on air power, get other countries to put troops on the ground, take no chances with refugees, talk really tough. And from the Those Who Served column, honoring Vietnam War veterans, today, Frank Elston, who was a staff sergeant in the Army, serving from August 1967 to August 1968. He served in South Vietnam, including Chu Lai and Dong Ha. His memory from his service: leaving my comfortable reporter's desk at the Decatur Herald and trading it for a life in the jungles of Vietnam was quite a change. Many thoughts come to mind as I think back on those days from August 1967 to August 1968, when I served with the 10th Public Information Detachment assigned to the 196th Light Infantry Brigade. When I joined the 196th, we were stationed in Chu Lai on the South China Sea. During the year that followed, we moved all the way to Dong Ha, near the DMZ, and back to Chu Lai. Through God's graces, I survived the Tet Offensive and other challenges, but I have pushed memories of lost brothers and those difficult times to the back of my mind. What I enjoy recalling was the opportunity I had to serve as an unofficial Herald and Review Vietnam correspondent. In addition to articles presenting my own reflections on the war, I wrote articles about Decatur and area soldiers serving in the same region. I was even able to reconnect with and write stories about fellow MacArthur High School and Millikan University alumni. And there's a photograph with the article of Frank taken in 1967 or 1968 reading the Decatur review, excuse me, reading the Decatur Herald while in uniform, captioned, "Frank Elston served two jobs while serving in Vietnam, soldier and Decatur Herald reporter." And finally, from the Decatur Tribune Online by Paul Osborne, we have an article, City Council Talks Revenues to Fund Priorities. Decatur City Council members on Monday voted against increasing liquor license fees as part of a series of revenue enhancements to fund recently announced community priorities, while tabling votes on two other items for further discussion at a later date. Officials tabled a vote on the creation of a city video gaming license and an associated $750 per machine fee, and on implementing a local motor fuel tax of 5 cents per gallon for non-diesel fuel and 1 cent per gallon for diesel fuel. Members are looking to discuss, among other items, how much of a tax should be levied, if any, or fees implemented, and specifics as to how any funds collected might specifically be expended. A recommended increase in liquor license fees from $2,000 to $5,000 for most license classifications, from $1,400 to $3,500 for Class N licenses, and from what is now $6,000 to $10,000 for Class P licenses was defeated. All three revenue streams were introduced to help pay for community priorities recently reintroduced publicly, but which have long been issues in Decatur, including community cleanup and redevelopment, declining property values, and roadway improvements. Any of the revenue sources, if improved, are to be tied to specific line items for the purposes identified and not get redirected into the city's general fund for other expenses. And finally, from the Decatur Tribune, a couple of local notes. Sorry that Bell's Jewelry at 112 East Prairie Street is going out of business after more than 68 years. Big going out of business sale starts tomorrow, which is November 19th, and runs through Sunday, November 22nd. Creakles is going to build its own freestanding location just north of its present location at 1355 Illinois Route 48 in the Colonial Mall. Groundbreaking for Todd and Cindy Teal's new location was held Monday morning on the grass lot north of Colonial Mall. Yep, Creakle Burgers will continue for many years. And this has been Wendy Bauer with the Decatur Herald and Review and the Decatur Tribune for Monday, November 23rd, 2015. I look forward to reading with you again soon. Thank you.